Today is January 23rd, 2013. This is Gwen Thayer. I'm the Associate Head of Special Collections here at North Carolina State University Libraries. We're here at the Hill Library at North Carolina State University in Raleigh. I have with me today Dr. James R. Wilson from North Carolina State University, Dr. Robert G. Sargent from Syracuse University, and shortly, we will also have Dr. Richard E. Nance from Virginia Tech. Today, we'll be discussing the history and creation of the Computer Simulation Archive here at North Carolina State University Libraries. So to that end, I'm going to ask Dr. Sargent, Bob, I'm going to ask him about how did the Simulation Archive first come about?
Thank you. Well, I started thinking in 1996 about the idea of having a simulation archive, and so I continued to think about it through 96 and 97, and I came to the conclusion that I thought it was a good idea. So then in 98, I called my good friend Jim Wilson at North Carolina State University, and I said, Jim, what do you think about the idea of having a simulation archive? And Jim says, I think that's a good idea. So we kicked it around a little bit, and he says, you know, here at North Carolina State in their special collections, they cover the history of science and technology, so perhaps this would be a location about it. So we decided we'd think about it individually for a few days, and a couple weeks later I called Jim back, and I says, I think it's a good place to have it. It's at North Carolina State ID. And Jim says, I do too. And I said, why don't you go talk to the people at the library? And so, Jim, why don't you describe your visit?
Okay, well, basically the way I was led to be aware of the emphasis that was being placed in special collections on the history of science and technology is I had been working on the research ethics initiative in the graduate school and been working with people across the university and had become aware of this emphasis. And I realized that they were very aggressively promoting this particular initiative within the Special Collections Department. And I contacted Russell Kuntz, who was the Director of Special Collections at that time, and asked him if we could meet and talk about the possibility of establishing a simulation archive here. And he was very enthusiastic and very supportive. And so I got back together with Bob, and that started the ball rolling. It was really, in many ways, the synergy between Russell Kuntz and Bob, primarily, and me, that we really were able to establish the momentum for getting the project going.
Were there other key players as well?
No, I think it was primarily Jim and I initially, and we proceed to formulate it at the library, and so we had operational. So at the Winter Simulation Conference in 1998, I announced that we were established this, and people were enthusiastic at that meeting, and it was underway. We had formulated here, and we announced it, and we were ready to start getting materials. And who do you think presented the first piece of material was other than Jim? So why don't you talk about the first donations?
I'll say a little bit about that. I had in my possession a final program from the first conference on computer simulation that was the predecessor of the Winter Simulation Conference, the 1967 Conference on Applications of Simulation Using GPSS. And I had that because I had been the program chair of the 1992 Winter Simulation Conference, in which we were celebrating the 25th anniversary of that conference, and I had, at Bob's suggestion, arranged for some history of that conference to be documented in that proceedings, and in the process of doing all that, had contacted the people who really founded the conference in 67, and they gave me this material. And so it occurred to me that the appropriate thing to do was to inaugurate the Simulation Archive with the first contribution being the first bit of memorabilia from the history of the Winter Simulation Conference. And it seemed like an appropriate thing to do, and this was the first accession.
And did this come from Julian Reitman?
Yes, it did.
And Julian tell me about
Reitman
that.
Julian was the program chair for the 1967 conference, and I actually contacted the individuals who were really the general chairs, program chairs, and proceedings editors for the first five conferences from 67 to essentially 71, really. And from my interactions with those people, I gathered a lot of material, and we invited them to attend the Winter Simulation Conference, and we had a 90-minute panel discussion that was videotaped. And in some sense, that is really, really sort of the genesis of a lot of things we're doing in the Simulation Archive now. And Julian Reitman has, since 1967, given the keynote address at the 1988 Winter Simulation Conference, in which he gave the first sort of history of the conference and of the field of simulation, and then we picked up on that again at the 1992 Winter Simulation Conference. And Julian has since then written several articles on the history of simulation. He also had has had a long-lasting interest in the history of technology in general and in simulation in particular.
So let's talk about how we've built up this collection from this core item from Julian Reitman, which came to you. So after that, what came next?
Well, in 1998, Professor Ingolf Stahl, a longtime participant in the international simulation community, visited from Sweden, visited us here at NC State, and contributed some of the materials that he had developed on the microcomputer version of the general purpose simulation system, the same software that was basically the primary focus of the first conference. And he visited for a couple of days and contributed several of his books and papers. And he subsequently, in 2011, has visited again and made further contributions of his work in the micro GPSS software.
One minor correction. I think Jim meant to say 1999, because we formed the synth in 98. It was really 99.
Okay. I guess that's correct. 99, yes. Then the next accession, it was sort of unofficial, was in 1999. My advisor, Alan Pritzker, who was a professor at Purdue and also a noted entrepreneur in the field of simulation, retired. And when he retired, all of his books from his library, his professional library, were sent here and contributed to the archive, but for reasons that are now unclear in my memory, they weren't actually, the accession date wound up being recorded as 2003, but the actual accession of much of his books and papers was really in 99, and there was a second accession in 2003. Then the next major accession, and by far the largest accession that we've had at the Simulation Archive, was that in October of 2003, Bob Sargent brought down from Syracuse his books and papers. I'm quite sure this is a couple of orders of magnitude larger than any other contributions that we've had to the archive. And I can say that both Bob and I put a lot of sweat equity into the transference of this to the Simulation Archive in terms of unloading all this onto the loading dock downstairs, so that I can say that we've put on not only intellectual effort into this, but substantial physical effort into the creation of the Simulation Archive, or the Robert G. Sargent collection within the Simulation Archive. This was followed swiftly in November of 2003. Julian Reitman visited here for a couple of days, and he contributed all of his books and papers on simulation, primarily relating to the Winter Simulation Conference, I believe. So that was another major accession, but not nearly as large as Bob's in terms of the sheer volume of the
material.
And
two other things that occurred there. Each of us did an oral recording.
Yes, yes. And I actually recorded, I had an interview with each of them at the satellite shelving facility, or well, one of them was at the satellite shelving facility, and one was downstairs in where the special collections department was located at that time.
Before we go on to Dr. Reitman's donation, let's talk about your donation, Bob, and what was involved with that and all the materials that were included.
Well, as Jim said, it was a large collection. Jim and others were urging me to, since I was kept talking about being in retirement or getting near retirement, when am I going to bring my materials down here? So one day I rented a large trailer and filled many boxes, and so it covered books, proceedings, personal papers, just basically I emptied my office out at the university, and I had been sort of a collector because I wanted to have every book in simulation. I collected many proceedings I could of the simulation conferences and papers and personal correspondence, so course material, education material. So it was a large amount of material, and so I brought it down here, and Jim said he had only had to help me unload. I had to load it all, so that was a lot of work. So it's rather a large collection, and you know, it was sort of hard to part with it. I still miss some of it, but it's hopefully has a good home here.
In fact, it was so many banker's boxes that they were lined all the way across the loading dock, four high and two deep. And if you've seen the loading dock, you realize that that's a lot of material.
So we can safely say that it's really the heart of the collection, the core of the collection in its early phase. So then we can also turn to Dr. Reitman's materials that came afterwards.
Yeah, well, yes. Julie Reitman gave materials, as Jim indicated. He was involved with starting the Winter Simulation Conference, and he was also an industrial person. And as a result, because industrial people aren't collectors and generator materials like academic people was, so he brought things from industry in that kind of perspective, and then so he had that material. And then following that, Dr. Richard Nance, who you mentioned, brought his material, and then we had two other people, early people, Phil Kiviat, and then Dr. Harry Markowitz, who also is a Nobel Prize winner, gave his stuff on his early contributions.
And in 2005, when Dick Nance visited here and contributed all his material, I conducted basically an audio interview with him at that time. That was at the satellite shelving facility. In those days, we took it directly to the satellite shelving facility.
So oral histories have always been a very important part of this collection.
Well, I think it was trying to capture interviews with people to describe their history, because you have written documentation that's been collected in physical sense, but trying to get some oral history, I think, through audios was worthwhile. I remember in my case, we talked until we ran out of tape.
That's right. We ran out of tape. That's correct. Now, when Phil Kiviat brought all of his material to the 2010 Winter Simulation Conference, was there an audio
interview? No, all we did was he just showed up for about a half hour at the meeting of some people, and he just gave it to us, and he chatted a little bit about the material he gave us, and he sort of reluctantly, in some sense, departed with it because he loved it and kept that. He made copies of some of the stuff that he did give the library, because he had been out of the field for a few years, but he kept things that really meant something to him, and so that's what he gave to the archives.
And so I brought that back in my van from the Winter Simulation Conference in 2010, and I guess it was then the accession was formal in 2011.
Yes. And Harry Markowitz, I think, just sent his material here. Is that correct? I think.
Yes. He sent it by FedEx, as I recall.
Yeah.
So we do have Dr. Nance here, so we can address the nature of his collection since he's actually right here and going to join us. So now we're going to include Dr. Dick Nance as well. And so Dr. Nance is going to speak to his collection as well.
I brought my collection in my own pickup truck, and I think I got a little bit of help in unloading it. The collection primarily focused on non-book items, because Bob and I had discussed earlier the contents of his donation, and I felt that you didn't need, we had a lot of duplications. Of course, he had a lot of individual unique things too, since he focused on trying to get a complete collection of simulation books. My intent was to provide special items that would be distinct from what Bob had already donated, but would reflect, I guess, an interest that came more from the language perspective. I had been a part of the program committee for the 1978 History of Programming Languages Conference, and two languages that were included from simulation there, GPSS and Simula, to reflect the interest in the languages required me to include some personal correspondence, some individual notes, and in 1993, the second History of Programming Languages Conference occurred, and my paper on the history of simulation programming languages was the only paper covering a genre of languages. And so I had material from the compilation of this paper. In fact, I recall now that there are a few items from Phil Kiviat's work with GASP that are included in my collection. Bob and I both realized that having documents that were proceedings of unusual conferences or sort of standalones would be difficult to access, and we both tried to do that in the contributions. And so I can remember, in fact, a discussion that we had earlier, a 1966 conference in New York City by a statistical group that dealt with simulation in healthcare. So that was the focus of my work, and my donations was in the language or modeling methodology techniques. And that is I think, represented in what is there.
Great. So one of the things we want to address with Bob is the endowment history and how some of the funds were generated to create this archive.
Okay. Well, after the archive was established in 98, people periodically give some donations, individuals or organizations. And they were spent to help support that, but there's no long-term mechanism to support the archives. So in 2007, I thought, well, we need to have an endowment. So I personally contacted NC State Libraries, and we discussed the establishment of such an endowment. I made a $5,000 donation, and we started what was called an incubator, because you had to have a minimum $15,000 to have a regular endowment, regular meaning that the earnings off it could be used to support whatever entity that the endowment was established for. And so at the 2007 Winter Simulation Conference, I announced at the professional meetings there that I established such a endowment. I put $5,000 in, and I said, we need more money. And so it was a surprising, the tremendous support that came forth. And so by the next year, in 1 year, we had raised enough money to have a regular endowment. And the organizations that contribute, the Informed Simulation Society, made a very major donation. ACM Sigson made a nice donation. The Friends of the NC State Library made a donation. And the Information Systems and Computing Department of Burnell University, located near London, England, made a donation, as well as three individuals, Jim Wilson here, Steve Roberts, and Junior Reitman. And so at the 2008 Winter Simulation Conference, I was able to say, wow, we now have a regular endowment to support this archives. And so that was very, very exciting to me, and I think the simulation community really appreciate. What's very nice is that the professional societies are really supporting this. And so since that time, there's been a number of significant contributions made, some by individuals, but primarily by SIGSIM, ACM SIGSIM, and the Informed Simulation Society. So we have really been very fortunate to develop a reasonable size endowment to help support the current endowment. Now, there's a second aspect that I ask when formulating this with the library and the endowment people is, I says, not only do I want to give this money when I formulated this in 2007, but I said I want to have an advisory committee to advise and support this. And I was totally unaware or didn't have any expectation of what the library reaction is going to be, because it could not be put formally into the endowment agreement. But I got a very enthusiastic response from the library. They said, fine, let's do that. And so I, working with Jim and Greg Reske of the library here, we developed what was called an informal agreement to have this, and the library report to people, because an advisor to the library, and it was consist of three people. And I suggested that the three people be myself, Jim, and Dick. And that was appointed in 2007. And here we sat, busily, actively working on developing the archives in a variety of ways.
I'd like to add a comment about the significance of the contributions that have been made to the archive by professional societies. The initial contributions to the archive from the Simulation Society of the Institute for Operations Research and the Management Sciences, that is to say the Informed Simulation Society, and the Special Interest Group on Simulation of the Association for Computing Machinery, ACM-SIGSIM, those contributions, it's my understanding from Lois Fisher Black, who was the Director of Special Collections in the period from, I think, about 2000 to 2004, as I recall, told me that, in fact, those were the first contributions from professional societies to support collections within the history of science and technology. And they regarded that as a major advance, because they could then point to the prominent support from these professional societies and from the Brunel University to enable them to make a case for institutional support and professional society organizational support for other holdings within the History of Science and Technology Initiative. So this is something that's received a lot of attention from the Special Collections Department over the last 10 years. And of course, this accelerated dramatically when Bob established the endowment. And the momentum has never really slacked up since Bob made the initial endowment of the archive.
So the endowment has continued to grow. What are some of the milestones about the growth of this endowment and some of your goals?
Well, the goal is we hope to continue to add to the endowment. And of course, originally I said if I get to 20,000, it'd be great. Could we get to 25,000? And now our next goal is going to be 40,000 to 50,000. So, it continues to grow, and hopefully it will continue to grow. And so we encourage donations, and they're all tax deductible from individuals. But, you know, and we had other donations. Tom Schreiber of the University of Michigan made a major donation to the archives as one individual, but we have had smaller donations. So hopefully it will keep growing, and this will provide support for the archives, as well as Jim has just mentioned, the visibility in terms of support from that. I believe that the director of the libraries is very pleased with that. Can you comment on that,
yes.
Jim, at all?
In fact, Susan Nutter has mentioned to me over the course of several years that the growth of the Simulation Archive as a sort of an example of the kind of thing they'd like to see in the other collections within Special Collections. I mean, I think this is something that has really been viewed, as I understand it, as sort of an exemplar of what can be done if there is significant support from individuals and professional societies to support that. And so I think that to the best of my knowledge, this is really one of the most successful efforts at trying to build up not only the accessions, but the financial support to maintain and grow those accessions and catalog them and make them available. That's another thing that that is significant. Was that when we reached the level of $15,000, prior to that, the holdings of the Simulation Archive were really limited primarily, in fact exclusively, to NC State faculty, staff, and students. When the archive reached the status of having a full endowment of $15,000, it became openly accessible to everybody. And this has had a dramatic effect on the attitude of a lot of people about supporting the archive, because it is, in fact, openly accessible.
Now, Susan Nutter, that he just mentioned, is the director of the library. Now, one other thing I liked, maybe you can comment, and Jim, is the website. People can get online and
yes, the catalog entries for the website, the listings of holdings, and all that stuff is openly accessible. You don't have to have an NC State login to access it. One of the things that has been in conjunction with the growth of the archive was that we had a significant contribution from the American Statistical Association to support the digitization of all the proceedings of the Winter Simulation Conference going back to 1967. Now, we had started, when I was on the board of directors of the Winter Simulation Conference in 1999, 2000, in that period, I was able to convince the directors of the Winter Simulation Conference to authorize the posting on the website of all the proceedings starting from 97. That's when they had everything in PDF format. And with the support from the American Statistical Association, another sponsor of the Winter Simulation Conference and a major sponsor of the Simulation Archive, they were able to, in 2011, complete the digitization of all the back numbers of the Winter Simulation Conference from 1996 back to essentially 1968, when they had the first. So all that stuff was scanned in from, among other things, the proceedings that were in the Robert G. Sargent collection and the Richard E. Nance collection, so that we now have openly accessible, high quality, digitized content from all those proceedings. And the only other way in which those proceedings are accessible is for institutions that have paid subscriptions to things like, for instance, the Explore, IEEE Explore, the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers, or the ACM Digital Library. So there are several proprietary sources for that material. But what we succeeded in doing with the support of the American Statistical Association is to make all that stuff openly accessible. And this has dramatically advanced the visibility of the Winter Simulation Conference as a venue for the dissemination of rapid dissemination of advances in the field.
Bob, do you want to add to that in any way?
No, I think we're getting this. I think we've described the endowment and the archives very good. I just maybe I make one additional comment. The advisory committee here, there's three advisory committee members here, and Dick hasn't spoken very much, but you know, I was chair of the group for a while, and I always believe you turn it over, so Dick is now currently the chair of this group. But I'd say the committee has been extremely active, and I think the library people have been very receptive and very helpful. So it's been a two-way flow. They've been very enthusiastic from the top of the director down to the directors of the special collections, and we've been interactive. So I think it's been outstanding relationship. When you start these kind of activities, you don't know what direction they're going to go. And I think it's been positive, and hopefully we conveyed some of the reasons for that. But I think it's been positive on both sides. You know, it takes a lot of work on this committee's part, but it also takes work on part of the library personnel. And as a result, you get positive results, and I believe we've had positive results in both in developing the collection for the archives and in developing the endowment. So I think from my perspective, and maybe you two would like to just add your views, but I think it's been very good.
Well, I think it's been excellent. And one of the keys, I believe, is to maintain the visibility and the feedback on the growth of the simulation archive. And Bob initiated, as in his tenure as chair of the Simulation Archive Advisory Committee, the placement of a report in the various newsletter that go among the professional society members, if they have one, and also making annual reports at the Winter Simulation Conference to the business meetings of the societies. And this has helped to keep the visibility, has helped to maintain a feedback to these organizations as to the benefits they are reaping. And I would also make the side comment that the digitized versions of the WSC proceedings going back from 1997 that are here are significantly better in quality than those that you could get from the ACM Digital Library. I cannot speak to IEEE Explorer, but I do know that they did more of a totally automated scan when the ACM Digital Library produced theirs.
Well, the other point in that connection is that whereas the back numbers of the Winter Simulation Conference proceedings that were digitized here within the Simulation Archive were done from pristine copies, unmarked copies of the proceedings. Many of the back numbers of the WSC proceedings that are in the simulation in the ACM Digital Library are actually marked up. And so there's a significant difference not only in the resolution of the scan, but also simply in the purity of the copy. And I would add that one of the things that is quite clear from this experience in working with the Special Collections Department in doing this is that the level of effort that was required from people on the staff in the Special Collections Department far exceeded, really, any financial support that was provided by the American Statistical Society, which was substantial. But the effort, the level of effort was quite clear to me was let's just say that it seems to me that the staff of Special Collections put as much skin into this as the American Statistical Society put resources into it, so that it was really a remarkable achievement to do this.
Let's talk about some of the future projects, and in particular, this grant from the National Science Foundation and some of the oral history projects that are going to be going on. Bob, can you speak to that?
Well, we're fortunate that we submitted a proposal to the National Science Foundation, and we got a substantial grant from them, and to do oral history of the pioneers in the field. Now, this grant has come through North Carolina State University, and Jim Wilson here is the PI, principal investigator, so I think it's more appropriate for him to address the objectives and what we're going on with the grant than Dick or I, although we all worked on developing the proposal.
Let's give credit where credit's due. The genesis of the idea for this, as so many other things, is a common theme running through this interview, is the idea for this came from Bob several years before, and we discussed this for some time before we actually reached the stage of actually planning something like this. And the three of us worked on this through much of 2010 to put together a proposal. It was funded by NSF, and to essentially produce oral histories for many of the pioneers in the field of simulation who are, you know, long retired, and who, if we don't take advantage of the opportunity to talk to them while they're still active and healthy, that much of their experience that we could capture would be lost. And the other thing, in recent years, there have been several prominent leaders in the field of simulation, going back to the 50s and early 60s, who have passed away before we had any opportunity to conduct some sort of oral interviews to get some sense of where the field really came from and what our heritage really is. And so what we've been trying to do with the oral history project is to plan and execute a number of interviews very much like this one, in which we try to get from some of the pioneers, especially from the 50s and 60s, some sense of the way in which the field emerged and the way it evolved and how it kind of got its start. And I think this kind of thing is useful not only for historians of science, but also, I hope, for young people who are contemplating careers in the field and who can get some sense of the people who've gone before them, the magnitude of their contributions, and the possibilities that they may have for their own careers.
Well, I just may want to add one thing. We talk about the oral history. Early on, we had audio, but the NSF grant is primarily video.
Right.
And so that has been mentioned, but I want to emphasize that the NSF is video, like we're doing here, like Jim mentioned, but although we got some oral ones, I mean, just audio, but this here is emphasizing on video, so you see what the people look like and have the interaction.
There's one thing I would like to mention that I forgot to mention when I was talking about accessions. There was one accession made by me in 2011, which is a good example of why there's a certain sense of urgency about this oral history project. I said that I was the proceedings editor, I was the program chair for the 1992 Winter Simulation Conference, at which we celebrated the 25th anniversary of that conference. And now they're planning the 50th anniversary. But in any case, we arranged to have both at the keynote address and this panel session with the founders of the conference in 67, we had two 90-minute videotapes. We had the opening session on the past, present, and future of the Winter Simulation Conference, a 90-minute keynote address. And actually, I guess it was a 60-minute keynote address. But we videotaped the entire 90-minute opening session, and then we videotaped this panel discussion with the founders of the conference. And I kept those videotapes, and they are color videotapes, but I must confess that I kept them in my office from 1992 until 2011, when it finally occurred to me that perhaps I should contribute this to the archive. And fortunately, it turned out that they were able to digitize that before there had been any significant loss in the quality of the recording. But this is a sort of a cautionary tale about some of the urgency associated with what we're doing, not only in general in the Simulation Archive, but in particular in the oral history.
Great. So really, the last thing I want to address, really the future of the Computer Simulation Archive and any goals we want to address, collection goals, and how we can continue this partnership, really.
Well, as chair of the committee, I'll respond to that. And the intent here is to extend the work, to continue to expand the accessions, to identify key persons in the field that we shall contact with the hope and intent of getting their commitment to place their artifacts, their papers, their manuals and historical data at NC State in the Simulation Archive. And so we are looking forward to a long, prosperous future.